This is a another one of our ongoing series, using the tarot to investigate the laws of life. Tonight is session number 40. We're working with the law of magnetism. And I've shuffled the cards and laid out the spread, and the resulting spread is as follows. The starting point is judgment upside down, number 20 in the major arcana, a 2. The counterpoint is half of that. It's the Wheel of Fortune, right side up, number 10 in the major arcana, or a number 1. And then the creative the challenge is the Empress, right side up, number 3 in the major arcana. The purpose is the Queen of Rods, upside down, in the minor arcana. The endowment is the 6 of Pentacles, right side up. The Destiny is the Page of Rods, right side up. Then we come to the Pillar of Revelation. We have the 5 of Cups in the 7th position, which upside down. 5 of Cups, or the 7th position, is the real question. The card in the position of the Unseen Forces is the 4 of Swords, upside down. Spiritual Ideal is the Queen of Cups, upside down. And the culmination is the 8 of Swords, upside down. You might have noticed that all the cards in the Pillar of Revelation are upside down, meaning that we'll be looking at that from the point of view of the soul. And actually, we'll probably be looking at almost everything from the point of view of the soul. But there are indeed 3 majors. The first 3 cards are majors. And then there's 1, 2 rods, couple of swords, couple of cups, and a pentacle. And that pretty much rounds it out. Okay, so while I was laying the spread out, it occurred to me that this is a perfect example of the law of magnetism in action, because in laying this out, doing the spread, I used the deck of 78 tarot cards, shuffled them, as they say, at random. Of course, nothing in this universe is random. But I had my question, which is not a brilliant question. It's the same question I've been asking now for 40 weeks with different laws. What is the divine law of magnetism, and how can it best, how can an aspirant best harness it? Very simple question, really. But by focusing on that question, as our first card indicates, judgment, by creating an invocation or using your mind to discover things in life, go behind the cloud of hiding the sun, which apparently has been happening in your areas as well as down here. We've had warmer temperatures, but a lot of rain and mist and clouds. So it's been very gloomy. But by using the mind to go behind the clouds and obscure the sun or the light, we organize the substance of thought. And hence the brilliance of the statement by Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, asking that shall be given you, seeking you shall discover, etc. This is based on the law of magnetism. The magnetism is a basic, is basically the static electricity, if you wish, that holds all substance, all finer substance together. And it is the principle that the spirit uses during our life to relate to the personality. it's a very indirect kind of thing, except that it's all-inclusive and does extremely well. It gets exactly what it wants out of each lifetime. It can also be viewed as the energy that impels us into incarnation to gain experience. So because of the law of magnetism and the law of magnetic response, I can formulate a question, lay out a tarot spread, 10 cards, and get intelligent answers and insights from the abstract mental plane, from the Buddha plane, from wherever I can focus. And that's the underlying meaning and power of the tarot. It could be said that the law of magnetism is the fundamental energy operating the tarot, operating our minds when we're working correctly, and governing our personality lives. And so it's a very important law. In many senses, it's synonymous with the law of love, which we looked at 3 weeks ago, the last time we did one of these. But there's so much misunderstanding of the energy of love that to put this is a little bit different in that this is the nuts and bolts of how this works, especially in terms of the soul exercising inspiration and control over the personality. And over a number of lifetimes building up that level of interaction or relationship. It's also how groups form. And so, for example, if you meditate on the concept of freedom, which is one of the major elements of the Spirit of America, gradually it is through the law of magnetism that you come more and more in harmony with and in tune with the energy of freedom and the Spirit of America itself. And so this gives us enormous power and freedom, or invitation anyway, to contact any divine force, any spiritual force, the soul, our soul. I can use this to contact the soul of a student or the soul of anybody else to find out what the relationship is, to see where people are. It's the law of magnetism that makes all this work. And it's the law of magnetism which gives us the ability to control and discipline in our life. So, very, very busy energy, very profound energy that the more we learn to work with it, the more skilled we become as an aspirant or an agent of God. So the starting point is judgment. Clearly, it's a energy that works to enlighten us, to help us make sense of life, to communicate, basically, to expand our awareness of what's going on in life. I was working this morning to create an ebook, work on creating an ebook format for the fourth book in From Heaven to Earth, The Peace of God. That'll be ready shortly. And one of the interviews in that is an interview with Yogananda, and he was asked in the interview to give an example of how a mantra might be used effectively in meditation. So he gave the example of, well, you could take a phrase such as, what's the phrase, divine love permeates the whole universe. And you could send that at any level. He was talking about sending at the mental level or the Buddhic level. And if you did that for a number of times, you would, A, become much more responsive to divine love, and you discover a lot about the nature of whatever level you were sounding this at. Plus, you would gather and collect the energy of love, which he was giving a lot of key hints there. Those are great interviews that we should be rereading all the time. So simply by intoning the notion divine love permeates the whole universe, you're setting in motion the principle of magnetism, the law of magnetism, and you come into that sets you up to be in harmony or in step with or in vibration with all other beings who are responsive to or embodying or animating the principle of divine love at their own level, anywhere from a pebble on the beach to Lord of Karma in the divine, in the universe. So this gives us an enormous scope. It gives us a very effective tool. It is profoundly related to developing the mind, and hence we start with judgment. The counterpoint to that is the Wheel of Fortune. The Wheel of Fortune, of course, is Patsy Jack with a goatee. He's got a goatee there. And a crazy headdress. And there's two snakes coming up around this entity that embodies the Wheel of Fortune, signifying that fate itself or the principle of fortune is energy that is also a spiritual being, and that this suggests that the very fabric of intelligence is an expression of the law of magnetism in process, in action, really. And that this is a force field that we're meant to examine and explore using our individual mind to explore the mind of God. And it puts to the lie the idea that there can be such a thing as random happenings or accidents or luck. Everything is controlled by the workings and the principles of divine of the law of magnetism, and the way we activate this is that the law ensures that we are able to draw to us what we need and repel from us what we do not want. Now, there are times when we're consciously learning how to do this that it seems to falter and fail because it's no longer necessary for us to rely on the automatic workings of this. We're meant to take it over and operate this law ourselves on our own basis. And there will be a period of time, and in a single life, it might seem like a large amount of time covering years, but in the duration of the soul, it's not very long, in which we make the transition from having this happen automatically in the background to learning to control it as the magician might. So we have to keep in mind that there are many skills to be learned. The primary way in which we view and can best understand the law of magnetism is to understand that this is the law that allows spirit to manifest through form. It can allow the spirit, the monad, to create a mechanism which becomes the soul that then incarnates through a series of personal lives. And even though it seems improbable that in a fairly immature individual, spirit allows the personality to develop and essentially loses control of it for 50, 60, 70 years, or however long the personality lives until it dies, and then regains control of it. That's an illusion. There's never been a loss of control because of the law of magnetism. An analogy would be if you had a faithful dog or cat, not that it's likely that any cat would ever agree to this, but if you had a faithful dog or pet, And it was magnetically responsive to you. For example, the type of dog that responds only to a single master, then it would dutifully come back to you at all times, no matter how far it might stray. And we've had great reports of dogs being left behind hundreds, thousands of miles when a family migrates to a new home, and being separated by accident, but being able to find the family because it hones in on that vibration. The law of magnetism carries it forward. That's the type of devotion and one-pointedness that can happen. So we should never in our life think that we're all alone and how are we going to find the people that we need to find and so on. They're there. All you have to do is focus on it magnetically, and inexorably they will appear in your life, or you will appear in their life or something like that. So this is a very important law, best understood consciously as we develop skills such as invocation and judgment and discernment and whatnot. But it's this law that then means that at the end of your lifetime, when you die, you don't suddenly wake up on the inner side and say, where's my soul? There's a unbreakable connection between you and the soul, you and your fellow sojourners on the way, as it were, and you can always follow that trail back to your origin, to the soul, to the group of people that you belong to. This is because consciousness is set up in this way. There is no separation between spirit and personality. There's the illusion of it, the impression of it, the my God, why has thou forsaken me, self-pity version of it. But there's no truth to the rumor. You can always follow, because of the law of magnetism, if you have once learned to respond to the soul, you can reactivate that response mechanism over and over and over again. And the more you do that, the more commonly thoroughly the soul animates the life of the personality. All right, so this has gotten us going here, the judgment and the wheel of fortune. Judgment being our individual role here, the wheel of fortune describing the impact of the law of magnetism on consciousness in general. And may I say that when you combine what we talked about with the law of love 3 weeks ago with what we're talking about tonight with the law of magnetism, you get a complete package if you think about it and explore it. The law of love is, of course, love is not limited to the emotional level, but the average person tends to think of love in that way. This describes more the way in which the love of God nurtures the solar system, the system of which we're a part, and also describes how it can be best used mentally, buddhically, monadically. Ultimately, it is the monad or the spirit that, there's this nonsense that's taught in the West that nirvana means that you lose all sense of your selfhood and you become like a drop in an ocean. And that's a old wives tale told by some people who weren't old wives, but they acted as if they were. And without knowing anything about nirvana, never having tasted or experienced it themselves, they took inadequate descriptions in form of nirvana and tried to say, well, nirvana is like this, and it's not anything like it at all. But in fact, the law of magnetism means that you can relate to the soul of another person, you can relate to any spiritual element anywhere in the universe, and learn from it. This is the basis for the Tibetans' prodigious knowledge in the various Alice Bailey books, The Treatise on Cosmic Fire, The Treatise on White Magic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He's used this principle of the law of magnetism to explore all the nooks and crannies, not all of them, but the most important nooks and crannies in the mind of God. And we can learn to do the same thing. Okay, moving on, we have the Empress in the third position, the challenge. And this echoes some of what I've already mentioned. That is, the Empress is this huge divine figure that is standing in the valley or on the ground floor of a huge rock formation with a waterfall cascading in the background, and she's very much in the foreground. She's down to earth. She's brought heaven to earth and embodied them in the principles of fertility and gracefulness and nurturing love and so on. So we have the Empress here, which is a very definite symbol of incarnation, of bringing the light of heaven to earth. And that's a little dry down here. This, again, she has a rod that she's carrying. But between the Empress in that position and the Queen of Rods in the purpose, the card number four, we understand that we're working here with the feminine aspect of divinity, the need to create a sense of quality and penetrate the meaning of things, that we're not just working with superficial appearances here, but that we're defining relationships. We're here to express divine qualities, whether it's the quality of wisdom or the quality of love or joy or harmony or grace or peace or whatever. We're here to do that. And these two cards combine very nicely to convey this idea of attaining the refinement of consciousness, where she appears in a concave setting with rock all around her, but she is spirit. And same thing with the Queen of Rods. The Queen of Rods has transformed the energy of thought into a very refined, sophisticated, organized, productive energy. So we have the law of magnetism is what holds all this together and enables us to act and remember our spiritual heritage, our spiritual endowment, our divine endowment. And we can call upon this at any time. The more we develop the mind and our bridge to heaven, the Antikarana, our awareness of spirit, the more we're able to tap into this at any time. And this is emphasized in the next card, the card of the endowment, the Six of Pentacles. The Six is a card of great power and strength. And there's this fellow working with the scales and trying to achieve balance in his life. And right behind him is the connection, the bridge to heaven, the Anacharana, the central pillar, which is hinted at in the Queen of Rods, less so in the Empress, but it's there. Will be talked about again later on, but you'll see in the Eight of Swords the human being becomes the central pillar there. Well, back at the Six of Pentacles and the endowment, this is our capacity to take with us what we learn through all of our experiences. But again, it's not the personality that is the reason for all this. The personality is created by the soul in response to the instructions of the spirit, the monad. And at the end of each life, what it gains and learns is reabsorbed and it's balanced. A synthesis or balance is achieved. And the personality gains that which the soul has to offer, and the soul gains that which the personality has to offer. And this is the key element here behind what I talk about in terms of the companionship between the personality and spirit. That we are companions of the soul, companions of the spirit of America. We're not slaves, we're not servants, we're companions. We follow a path. We may not understand what that path is. That path is hinted at again in the next card, the card of destiny, the Page of Rods. Page of Rods is a very immature individual. The mind that is still in early lessons, emerging out of the wildness of the swamp. His hat pulled down over his eyes so that he's blind to what's around him, but he is becoming more and more aware of his inner potential. And so the Page of Rods is developing this awareness of the role he plays in life, but he's still out of balance. And that's what the Six of Pentacles demonstrates, is the capacity of spirit to use the law of magnetism to direct the unknowing personality in a balanced way so it learns its lessons. Now, we can sometimes look at the lives of other people or ourselves and say, if this is balanced, I'm really in big trouble. But that's a false conclusion, because we don't know. We tend to discount all the benefits and we don't know anything about the future and even what the soul had in mind at the beginning of the incarnation to accomplish and achieve. So we have to rely on this, on the law of magnetism to, we talk about having a moral compass and being attuned to the North Star or the North Pole. And this is an excellent idea, that the soul represents the North Pole or the North Star, and that we're magnetically fixed on this pole, on this guidance. And we don't have to look at and see things through corporeal eyes. We can look at upon life through the eyes of spirit and the eyes of light and illumination, and understand better that we have a ship of sailors. We have a compass that, or an astrolabe or whatever, a compass that fixes us on our destination, or on a well-known point in the sky like the North Star. And that, for us, as personalities, that's, of course, the soul. And this is the principle that guarantees that we have that fixed point, the point of the soul to guide us, even when we feel lost or desolate. Okay, I'm going to pause for a moment, entertain comments and questions. If anybody has them, we've covered the first six cards here, and then we're about to start the Pillar of Revelation. So any comments or questions at this point?
Anybody?
Talking about the law of magnetism here. Ultimately, it is the law of magnetism that reunites us, lost and lonely here on earth, with the soul, with spirit at the end of our life, and at the end of our career of many lifetimes. And the more we can do that consciously, using the techniques and making the growth that we talk about in all these classes, then the more quickly we can understand the nature of life itself and the ultimate goals that God is striving for. But there's a tremendous element of reunification here, which then has a corollary idea, and that is that there, no one is ever lost. You can't possibly be lost. You've all heard me talk jokingly about the couple that goes into the shopping mall and she loses her husband. I've always thought probably deliberately in many cases. But in fact, we use that euphemism for somebody who has died. Oh, I lost my husband 20 years ago. And my joking response is always, well, what have you done to find him? And, of course, we don't lose anybody because of the law of magnetism. We understand that we have this constant contact. There may be lapses in our awareness. There may be 20, 30 years where somebody has died and gone on and we don't make any effort to find them because we're ignorant or too lazy to do so. But no one is ever lost. And there's no reason why you shouldn't continue your relationship with them. And in this particular example, it's the law of magnetism that allows you, it's your magnetic love for the person that you quote-unquote lost that enables you to find them and find them in their full glory, their inner dimension. And so there's, for those who feel lost that way, it's an illusion. And it's this law that guarantees that all sense of separation is an illusion. It's an illusion of the element of time. Due to the law of magnetism, our relationships are always active and always available 24/7, no matter how many years ago somebody died or went to Seattle or whatever it might be. We still have that basic connection with them at the level of the soul. And if we take a little bit of time and effort, we can use this law of magnetism mentally to reconnect ourselves. So that's part of this dynamic here.
Carl?
Yes.
Anytime that where we feel that illusion of separativeness, and we go through that, whether it be, well, anything in life, and sometimes things hit you in the middle of the night, and you kind of feel like you're floundering a little bit until you make that reconnection to spirit. It's really that love, that magnetism, that is reconnecting us. So we're never, and I know I'm rambling, but we're never separated from spirit. I'm just wondering if one of these cards would serve as something to think about for that reconnection, or I'm thinking really love is a good way to reconnect too with spirit. But
exactly. Well, I mean, if you want, we haven't gone through the pillar of revelation yet, but the Queen of Cups would be a good example. The Empress would be a good one you could work with in much the same context. It means that the connection is within you. we're never separated because there is no separation. It's just an illusion of time and space. And by the way, when that hits you in the middle of the night, hit back. Now, I'm not saying hit your husband. I'm saying hit back at whatever it is, that sense of isolation that hit you. It's just mass consciousness being naughty, and you don't have to stand for that guff. The other thing is, it's probably too damn warm in your bedroom. Open a window, let a little fresh air in.
It hasn't been too warm up here.
Doesn't get too warm up there? I don't know. I grew up in Ohio. I always slept with my window open. At least 4 or 5 inches.
When you say hit back, are you thinking hit back with love, hit back with benevolence, something like that?
Something like that. I'm not literally saying throw a punch.
Oh, I know.
Peace be with you.
Yeah. Why don't you just use that, Rose just suggested peace be with you. The other suggestion would be the mantra that I quoted from Yogananda, the divine love permeates the universe.
The whole universe.
That's
the whole universe, the whole in the universe. So, I mean, that instantly reconnects you magnetically to divine love and the whole universe. And doesn't leave any room for this separation to occur in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any other comments or questions here?
Very good.
Well,
Carl?
Yes.
I think I'm remembering that the law of inquiry, where asking the question magnetizes us to the answer.
Right.
And that may be exemplified with the Wheel of Fortune.
Sure. Good. There's an obvious linkage here with several other laws of life that we've examined: the law of inquiry, the law of attraction, slightly different octaves of the same principle. Anybody else? Well, let's go on then, and I'm going to mute briefly here. Let's talk about the pillar of revelation here. The seventh card is the Five of Cups upside down. It's in the position of the what's the real question. And it gives us a handy brief guide for handling loss or the appearance of loss or wildness or chaotic conditions, which we are exposed to in physical incarnation. So we go through life, and suddenly it's like everything that we held dear is suddenly those overturned jars on the ground. Forgetting the two jars that are standing up straight and probably have ambrosia and nectar in them, the food and drink of the gods. But it's got some kind of wonderful thing in it. But we're focused on those three jars that we thought were so all important. And they've been spilled in haste or clumsiness or something or another, and we're irritated about the whole thing. So the real question is, what have we lost? And this brings to mind the principle of the conservation of mass and energy, matter and energy, that we learned back in physics, and the idea that nothing's ever lost is simply convert energy is converted into matter, or matter is converted into energy, but nothing's ever lost. And it does lead to speculation. Where did God get enough rain to rain for 40 days and 40 nights when Noah floated on the briny where did all that rain come from? Well, I don't know, but this year I've been thinking that he's experimenting with the same principle again, as much as it's rained down here. We've had plenty of rain, including the last few hours. But nonetheless, we have to keep in mind that the law of magnetism is we, part of collecting or part of magnetic control of our life is learning to focus on the fine qualities of life rather than the pitfalls and the traps and the prisons. And part of it is learning that as we focus the mind and spirit on specific things, if we go through life basically living the mantra that quoted from Yogananda, the divine love permeates the whole universe, then we will become aware of how enriched our life is with divine love, and we'll never be separated from that understanding. So it's almost like the edge of this person in the Five of Cups, his left shoulder and side of the body as we're standing behind him looking at him, creates a vertical line that separates the spilled cups to the left and the upright cards on the right. And it separates our achievements and our blessings from our curses and our losses. And that is just an illusion. It's the illusion of form. It's just as though the horizon separates heaven from earth. But that doesn't happen either, because there is no real separation between heaven and earth. There's one earth system, ecosystem. So we begin to understand that while some things may be earthly, nonetheless, our capacity as a human being with a conscious mind and whatnot, we have the capacity to enrich it by giving it more elevated purpose and expression. And so the real question is, what are we adding to earth? Not what have we lost, but what are we, how are we enriching earth? And that's going to be a pattern that evolves as we go through the Book of Revelation. The next card is the Four of Swords. This is the card in the position of unseen factors and unseen forces. And we have, we're sitting in a chapel or a castle keep or something, and apparently there's a casket here. A knight in shining armor has had his last joust. His sword is the emblem on the side of the casket. Three other swords are coming from above. And it reminds us that the hidden forces are that there is this tremendous, the events and experiences of human life are almost incidental, unimportant compared to the forces that are impelling us from within, impelling us to live up to our fullest potential, the purposes of our life and experience. And this is what shapes, this is the crucible in which our life and events are shaped. And so if we're struggling, if we feel that life has turned against us and is not giving us an even break, it's because we're not using the law of magnetic control effectively. We're dwelling on how sorry we feel for ourselves. We're dwelling in our self-pity, and we're choking on our own vomit in a root, or our own spittle or whatever you want. So we need to understand that the events of life on the physical plane are nothing unless we've animated them. Once the knight is dead, all that's left is an empty case of armor. just the spirit has gone off and is on to his next adventure. And so the armor and the sword are left behind, but the spiritual purposes of life have been fulfilled. Then we go on to the next card, which is spiritual ideal, and this is the Queen of Cups, and she's got a headdress similar to the Empress, all this energy, electric energy flowing down from spirit into the physical plane, passing through her compassion, her nurturing, in through her work of raising children or teaching or whatever she's doing. She's lifting up the life of form into a higher level. She's enriching it. She's nurturing it. And that's what this pillar of revelation is all about. The law of magnetism gives us a way in which we can nurture the ideals of life. We can, if you're a teacher, for example, it's not how many students you've taught the ABCs to that counts, it's how many students you've taught to recognize the value of the mind and the value of the human spirit. That's what really counts. Enriching life, bringing the life of God down into physical life and establishing it here. And this is done through ourselves individually and also through our groups. The law of magnetism is the energy that allows us to form groups, whether it's a business or a church or an informal group, a group of like-minded individuals working to serve some aspect of divine life, a spiritual group, a group like light, whatever it might be. It is the law of magnetism that where all these people are committed to the inner group purpose that binds them together. It's not that they're bound together by a charismatic leader. It's that they're bound together by a common purpose, a common design, a common impulse to serve, the will to help, the will to refine. And that's what the law of magnetism, once you have made that kind of a commitment, then you always return to that source. Just as you always return to the source of spirit, even though you may feel totally, you may be an agnostic or an atheist in a particular lifetime, and as a result of that, you may wander about in the fogs of illusion for a while after you die, but inevitably you break through those, and the call of the soul back to your home, to your starting point is irresistible. And you retrace those steps and you reunite with that from which you came in spirit. So this then leads us to our culminating card, which is the Eight of Swords. We have four swords on the right, four swords on the left. And the individual is trussed like a Christmas turkey, blindfolded, set in a pillar of the residue of ancient evil, and bound, probably gagged too, can't even cry for help, poor thing. But this is what we do to ourselves. We trap ourselves in limited expectations. We fail to understand that it is the power of those swords that can slice those ropes and free us. But we've trapped ourselves in our sense of loneliness and our sense of selfhood. What is selfhood other than, in most cases, a huge illusion that people create about themselves in order to bind themselves to their current situation? It excludes, in most cases, the possibility of the soul redeeming them and helping them. And that is the only thing I would call a tragedy. It's understandable, it's easy to overcome, however. It's easy to fall into it, but it's also easy to overcome it. You just need to reach out and call for the assistance of what you know to be true. But I've seen this happen, and too often people, even people who are working to grow, they hit a spell where they have unwittingly attracted the very conditions that limited them through the wrong use of magnetism. They've longed for things that they really don't want, but they, nonetheless they've drawn them to them, and now they have these conditions. They haven't taken care of them. They haven't restricted them. And so now they're all tied up and bound and gagged by what they think is their destiny, but it's not. It's just their inability to use the law of magnetic control effectively to snap those bonds. The moment they realize the power of a spirit within them to help them grow, to help them nurture the life around them, they can break free of those bonds. We all go through this process. It's one of the necessary steps of learning to discover your spiritual self. Because your spiritual self doesn't have that attitude towards selfhood. It has the attitude of self-liberation, of being free to fly and soar and rise to the highest potential. But we have to see that those very things that the fellow in the Five of Cups considered to be lost opportunities have now become chains and ropes that bind the individual and their sense of individuality in the physical plane. And we have to snap those and strengthen our ties to the soul, to the spirit, to those things that we hold dear, the spirit of America, the divine energy within a profession that we might have if we're a healer or doctor or something, the divine forces of healing, whatever it might be. We have to make that connection ourselves and snap those bonds, and that's the power of the law of magnetism. Okay, I'm going to unmute here and ask for more questions and comments. Any questions or comments?
There's so much to this reading. It's remarkable. The thing that I find to be interesting is that some of the things that happened in the last couple of days seem to be related to this law tonight. I was talking with someone yesterday about who had lost, as we say, lost his wife. And he had made the comment about he lost really two people, his wife and his best friend. And, you know, and I got into the discussion about not losing anyone and really the fact that that love binding the two of you together, that you are not lost to each other.
Well, maybe his wife went off with his best friend.
That could be, but no. This is special circumstances and very, very difficult at the end.
Right, I understand. I'm being
very
facetious
well.
Here.
And then today, one of my clients, he's just grown so much, and it's remarkable to see, but he's choosing all these books. So he just recently had just started to read, this book on James Clerk Maxwell, who wrote a treatise on electricity and magnetism, and said he was the most influential 19th century scientist. I had never heard of him, but he demonstrated that electricity, magnetism, and light are all manifestations of the same phenomenon, the electromagnetic field. And I thought, very interesting that we were having that discussion this morning. And, you know, there is a connection with what you're talking about here tonight. But it's kind of remarkable. I remember you saying about what you love and what you hate, you're still binding those things to you.
Right.
You have said that so many times.
Well, as a clue here, the Tibetan refers to this law, says that the exoteric term for the law is the law of magnetism. The occult or esoteric terminology is the law of polar union, which implies that we all know about the two poles of any magnetic field, and that electricity is generated, and so is magnetism. It's the opposing forces of the two poles, and the control of this comes as you learn to harness the twin poles and reunify them, even though they're going in opposite directions. So there's a dramatic clue in all that for the investigational electrical phenomena. There's a dynamic clue in that for the development of human psychology and an understanding of yourself. But good. Who else wants to jump in? Anybody? Well, that's it for tonight. Thank you and good night.
Thank you.